UnderstandTorah.com, Parashat Shemot. We're starting off the new Sefer, Sefer Shemot. The Ramban very famously starts off with his introduction. He says that the whole theme of Sefer Bereshit was Sefer HaYetzirah, V'Hidush HaOlam, the book of creation and creation of the world, the creation of everything, really, talking about how the actions of our forefathers was a form of creation for their children, because all of the actions and happenings of the forefathers will eventually be repeated later on by their children throughout the rest of time. When it comes to Sefer Shemot, the Ramban calls it Sefer HaGalut VeHaGe'ula, the book of exile and the book of redemption. One theme, exile/redemption. It talks about how the Jewish people left their homeland. They went to a land that wasn't theirs, and then eventually they left that place. They left Mitzrayim, but they still weren't redeemed because they may not be slaves anymore to the Mitzrim over there, but they still weren't people who the Shekhinah rested with until eventually they got the Har Sinai. Once they got the Har Sinai and they received the Torah, they accepted the Shekhinah into them, and they were able to restore themselves back to the high level of their ancestors. But there was one more step that the book needed to finish off with, which is the Mishkan. The end of the book of Shemot talks about the Mishkan, the Hashra'at HaShekhinah. The Shekhinah is brought back to the world and to rest with Bnei Israel. So it's not necessarily by getting to their homeland, but it's about having God rest with them. So it's the Galut VeHageula, the redemption being that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rests with the Jewish people once more. The parasha starts off by saying, Ve'ele Shemot Bnei Israel, Habba'im Mitzrayma et Yaakov Ish Ubeto Ba'u. These are the names, and these are the names of the children of Israel who came down to Egypt with Yaakov. Each man came with his bayit, with his entire household. The commentaries ask the question, why does it start off Ve'ele Shemot, and these are the names? Simply could have just said Ele Shemot, these are the names. Why is there an extra vav over here connecting Ve'ele Shemot? This is called a vav hibur, connecting what's been mentioned previously. The Ora Chaim says something beautiful. He says, the reason we have the extra vav here is to connect the book of Shemot to the book of Bereshit, to say, just like Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, our forefathers who were mentioned in the book of Bereshit, were great tzaddikim, tzaddikim elyonim, these people as well that we're about to note, that we're about to mention, were also great tzaddikim. We're connecting the past with the present. The commentaries also ask the question over here, why is there a need to tell us all of the names of the people who came down to Egypt? If you look in Parashat Vayigash, we already mentioned everything. We have the whole family tree of Yaakov, including grandchildren. Why is there a need to mention so much over here about the names of the people who are coming down to Mitzrayim? Rashi says, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu counted these people during their lifetime with their actual names, Hazar Umna'am Bemitatam, he went and he recounted them as well in their deaths in order to Lehodia Hivatam Shinim Shelu Lekochavim, in order to show how much he loved them, and they compared to the stars. Shemotziam Umachnisam Bemispar Ubishmotam Shneemar Hamotzi Bemispar Sevaam Lechulam Beshem Yekra, comparing the names of these righteous ones to the stars that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps on looking at, he keeps on counting to show how much he loves them. So this is a display of the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's counting them over and over again. The Ramban says a little bit differently. He says, no, we're trying to get a full picture. If the theme is Galut VeHageula, the exile and the redemption, we need to start right at the beginning, even though we may have said it earlier for other purposes. Right now, we need to encompass that entire theme of Galut up to Ge'ula, and the Galut definitely started at the time that Yaakov and his children went into the exile when they all went to Egypt. The Rashbam talks a little bit differently. He says the whole idea of how we're starting off is to eventually get into Bnei Yisrael Paru Vayishiritzu Vayidbu Vya'atzvu Vimod Me'od, to talk about how numerous the Jewish people become. In order to really understand how much they became, we need to first understand how few they were in the beginning. So that's why he says we're getting into this whole idea, even though we already repeated it in the parasha of Vaigash in Sefer Bereshit. Pesukim continue, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. We start off by mentioning the four sons of Leah, the four oldest sons, and then we said Yisachar, Zevulun, and Binyamin. We mentioned Leah's other two children as well, Yisachar and Zevulun, and we put Binyamin in there as well. And then we mentioned the children of the Shefachot, Dan v'Naphtali, Gad v'Asher. These other four, even though in terms of age, Dan, Naphtali, Gad v'Asher were older than Yisachar, Zevulun, u'Binyamin. We mentioned first the sons of the woman who were not the maids, who were not the Shefachot. We want to mention first Leah's children. While we're mentioning Leah's children, we'll put Binyamin in there as well. We don't want Binyamin to be left alone and to name him alone according to certain commentaries. And then we'll mention Dan v'Naphtali, Gad v'Asher, who were the four sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. Vayhi kol nefesh yosei yerech Yaakov, 70 nefesh, v'yosef haya b'mitzrayim, and the number of individuals, of people who came from Yaakov, were 70 souls, 70 bodies, and this number includes Yosef, who already was in Mitzrayim. The purpose of this pasuk, says the Hizkuni, is in order to really internalize the niflaot haboreh, the wonders of Hashem, that with 70 souls, Yardu Avotenu leMitzrayim, our ancestors came down to Egypt, and then 210 years later, they increased to the point in time where there were 600,000 men alone, besides for the elders, the women, and the children. Really, it's unfathomable how we got to that high number, only with the chesed and the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we want to really introduce and emphasize the point that they really came down with 70 and they turned into this high number. Rabbeinu Sa'adia Gaon says that when we say over here, Yosef haya b'Mitzrayim, Yosef was in Egypt, that's just telling us, Yosef, with Yosef, the number 70 that we have here includes Yosef, even though he was already in Egypt, and you may not think to count him with everyone else who came down from Eretz Canaan, he is part of that 70, even though he was already in Mitzrayim. Rashi asks the question over here, V'lo hayu yodim shehu haya b'Mitzrayim? Of course we know he was in Egypt. What's the Hiddush? What are you trying to tell us that he was in Mitzrayim? We read the end of Bereshit, we know where he was for all of those years. So Rashi tells us, what's the point of telling us? He was in Egypt. To emphasize the point that Yosef was a super righteous person, even after he left, he's the same Yosef that was tending to the sheep of his father. He's the same Yosef after he became king of Egypt. He's still standing within his righteousness. He is still that same Yosef HaSadik. Then the Pesukim continue, and they say, Vayamot Yosef v'kol ehav v'chol hador hahu. Yosef died, and all of his brothers died, and that entire generation died. There are those who understand this last part of his entire generation died on being on the entire 70 that we're mentioning over here. Not only did Yosef and his brothers die, but all of their children, those 70 died as well. Others want to explain that, no, we're not only talking about those 70, but kol hador hahu, that entire generation of Egyptians who lived in Yosef's time, anybody who saw the honor that Yosef had died as well, and that's in order to transition into the pasuk that tells us, Vayakom el chadash ha-mitzrayim, asher lo yadat Yosef, that a new king arose in Egypt who did not even know Yosef. So we're trying to really make that point that the Mitzrim and the entire Eretz Mitzrayim moved on from Yosef and took on a new identity. But again, as long as Yosef was alive, as the brothers were alive, no bad could happen to the Jewish people. It's only after they passed away did the Mitzrim start to get nervous about Bnei Israel. Pesukim continue and they say, Ubnei Israel paru, vayishretzu, vayedbu, vayatzmu bimod meod, vatimaleh ha'ares otam. It talks about the Jewish people were fruitful and they swarmed and they increased and became very, very strong and the land became filled with them. Hachamim talk about these different words that describe how the Jewish people became numerous. It says that the Jewish people, Bnei Israel, paru, they became fruitful. The Ibn Ezra says, just like a tree, ke'etz hanoten pidyo, just like a fruit gives off its tree. Same thing with the Jewish people. They were so numerous, they were like a fruit tree. Others say that there were no miscarriages during this time. The next word, vayishiretzu, a sheretz is like a creepy crawler, it's like a bug that they had so many children, they were like bugs. Bugs don't just give birth, or insects don't give birth to one child. They give birth to so many children at one time, and they give birth to them in a very, very quick amount of time. It doesn't take them 9 months to hold on to them. Famous Rashi over here, he says that every woman would have 6 babies at a time. They were so numerous. And the pasuk continues, Vayirbu, they became so many. talking about the Jewish people now in general. Now the nation became so many. Specifics were paru vayishirtzu, and that's vayirbu. They became so many, so numerous as a nation, vayatzmu, and they became very strong. Talking about the Jewish people also as a whole, mashal of a phone book. It's not like one page of a phone book you just could rip off, but now they became unified as one, and like the many pages of a phone book, it becomes impossible to rip. They became so united and so strong together. Bimod meod, they couldn't get any more. So many and so many. This word going back on everything we said previously, exceedingly. It became something that was impossible to really comprehend how strong it was. The Akedah Yitzhak over here explains why we're really getting into this whole thing of how the Jewish people became so many, because this eventually became the complaint of Paro. He used this vulnerability that the Jewish people had, that they were so numerous in such a quick amount of time, in order to instill fear into his nation, like we're going to say in a few Pesukim from now. Vayomer el amo, hine am bnei Yisrael ram ve'atzum mimenu. The Jewish people, Paro tells his nation, are stronger and more numerous than we are. So he puts fear into their heart in order to get the Mitzrim on his side and get them to do his bidding in order to enslave the Jewish people. Vatimaleh ha'aretz otam, and the land became filled with them. The Emek Davar, the Netziv explains over here, Vatimaleh ha'aretz otam, the land became filled with them, means that they didn't just stay to themselves in Eretz Goshen, but now they spread all over Egypt and they were everywhere, and the Mitzrim were seeing them all over the place. And this helped to contribute to the quote-unquote anti-Semitism that Paro created. Pasuk Het says, Vayakom melech hadash al Mitzrayim asher lo yada et Yosef. A new king arose over Egypt who did not know Yosef. Rashi brings that in Machloket over here, what it means, they didn't know Yosef. According to one opinion, hadash mamash, totally a new king, one that didn't exist beforehand, a new installment of a king. And the other opinion was, Shirit hadshu gezer otav, it's the same Paro, but one that just came with new decrees. The Hachamim asked the question over here, how could it be that he didn't remember Yosef? Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch answers over here, and he says that it's very possible that a new king from a foreign nation came into Egypt and conquered Egypt, and it was a king that didn't really have the backstory of what Yosef did for the country. It's somebody who came in and really took over. And this king came to the people, and he was nervous. He was nervous of a rebellion, and it would fit that he was nervous of a rebellion because he just rebelled himself. He was just involved in a coup, according to this commentary. And he tells the nation, Vayomer el amo, hine am bnei Yisrael rav ve'atzum mimenu. He tells the nation, look at this people, the bnei Yisrael, they're more numerous and they're stronger than us. They're growing in number. They're strong. We got to be nervous. What's going to happen when they become too large or they became too much? Paro's coming up with seemingly certain ideas of what he wants to do to the Jewish people, to Bnei Israel. And he had to justify it. He had to rationalize it to the people because Bnei Israel was very much entrenched into the society at the time. And the people, the nation of Mitzrayim, wouldn't put up with this hatred. He had to come up with a plan that was going to inculcate the nation of Mitzrayim with this understanding that the Jewish people, that Bnei Israel, are bad. So he comes up with a whole plot, and he tells them, "Havanit hakemalo." He says, we have to be very careful, and let's be wise in how we deal with these people. Let's outsmart them. Penyed be, what's going to happen? These people may become very numerous, they may become so large that we are going to have a problem. They're going to become so many that a war is going to eventually break out. We're going to have an invasion from another country, and Bnei Israel is going to join our enemy. They're going to be a fifth column, and they're going to fight us, and they're eventually going to leave the land. The first fear of Paro, he's coming up with really these the roots of anti-Semitism. He's telling something that doesn't exist right now. What will be? Trying to predict a future trend. If the Jewish people, if Bnei Israel gets too large, we're going to have real problems. Paro had to, again, according to the Ramban, come up with this plan. He didn't want to write out straight, say, I want to kill them, let's destroy Bnei Israel. Rather, he knew that this would be a total change of policy from the previous king. So he couldn't totally revolutionize the policy of the Jews. So he took it in small steps. He didn't want to defy the rule of the previous king who brought in Bnei Israel. So he said, we're nervous of what's going to happen in the future. And then he says that they may become too much and we're going to have a problem and they're going to come kill us. So Paro had to come up with small steps in order to bring the Egyptian people to that point where they're able to involve themselves in discrimination. And he says, what's going to happen? They're going to fight us. They're going to leave the land. The Ramban says over here that Paro is trying to tell the people, you should be nervous for your money, be nervous for your cash, for all of your possessions. There may be a war. Bnei Israel is going to join our enemy. They're going to grab all of the shalal. They're going to take all of the bounty. And they're going to run back to their homeland, to Eretz Canaan. And we're not going to have the ability to have our revenge and to get back our possessions. Others say that Paro was really telling them, we're relying on the labor force over here of Bnei Israel. And if they leave us, we're going to have a major labor shortage and it's going to lead to a real depression in the economy. So what did Paro do? Vayasimu alav sarei misim. Paro appointed taskmasters. He appointed people in order to watch over the Jewish people. Sarei misim, according to many, is tax collectors. In order to collect money from them, that's a small step that you could take. It's only the right thing for these foreigners who are partaking of our land to pay some sort of taxes. Let's have them pay their fair share. Leman anoto b'sivlotam, in order so that we could afflict them. He did this in order to create a burden for the Jewish people. And Hachamim say over here that he hoped with the Torah of the Avodah, with the burden of the work that he was putting on them, that they would have to refrain from engaging in relations and that they wouldn't have any children. They would be so deflated, they would be in such a bad state of mind that they would stop having children. But of course, this didn't work, as we'll see in a moment. And the nation of Israel built these cities of storage, named Pitom and Ramses for Paro and for the nation of Egypt. And the more that they afflicted Bnei Israel, the more that they multiplied and the more children did they have. So the plan of Paro wasn't work. And Paro and the nation became so disgusted with the nation of Israel that none of their plan was working. So they thought, you know what, let's up it. Let's up our game. Let's go to the next step. And now they start to put on more hard work onto them, tougher work, more back-breaking labor. And they created a bitterness in the lives of Bnei Israel. In the beginning, they were creating things that had a toilet, that had a sorech. They were building cities. They were involved in building storage units for Paro. But now, says the Malbim, they created labor that was going to be avodat parech, that was going to be back-breaking labor, beli menuha o beli sorech, that had no rest connected to it, and that had no purpose, just to break the bodies of Bnei Israel. When somebody's working for no purpose, it becomes demoralizing, and it becomes something that takes all the strength out of a person. They don't feel like they're contributing to something bigger. That's how Vaymarirut Hayohim Avodah Kasha. They bittered their life with all of the hard work. Behomer Ubil Benim. They gave them work that was with teat, that was with mortar, that was with levenim, that was with bricks. Bechol Avodah Basadeh. Every type of labor of the field. All of the work that they gave them was with crushing harshness. There was a total lack of sensitivity for the worker on the hands of the Egyptian. Paro saw all of this wasn't working. His plan to take the spirit away from Bnei Israel through all the cruelties that he brought wasn't breaking them. So therefore, he saw he had to up his game again and he had to try something else. The numbers continued to rise. The population growth was exponential. It was problematic for his plan. So Paro comes up with the next chapter. Paro, the king of Egypt, told the Hebrew midwives, the name of one of them was Shifra, and the other name was Pu'ah. The names here, it's significant that they were mentioned because We're recognizing them as individuals who had choices, who made the right choices, as we'll say. They acted according to their own will and with the will of Hashem, therefore they deserve to be mentioned. So he told them, he told them, when you're delivering the babies for the Hebrew woman, you see them on the birth stool, if you see that the child that's born is a son, it's a male, you should kill him. But if it's a daughter, you could allow that daughter to live. So Paro is trying to come up with a plan that's again going to assimilate Bnei Israel into the Egyptian people. He hoped that if there's no more males in society, that the females would eventually melt and assimilate into the Egyptians, and there would be no more fifth column possibility, no more Bnei Israel. According to the Hezkuni, Paro was nervous about war. The whole hashash, the whole nervousness that he mentioned earlier, is that havan taki malo pinyin bev hayaki tikrel min hama, that we're going to have an invader come in and Bnei Israel will join them in war. That won't be possible if you don't have male soldiers. Rashi says he was nervous here specifically about the males because of the stargazers. The stargazers told Paro that a Moshiach, the person who's going to come save the Jewish people, is going to be born. That person is going to be a male. So Paro was specifically nervous about the males that were going to be born. And let's see if the midwives take Paro's plan. Pasuk says, "Vatir'ena hamyaldot et ha'Elohim." The midwives feared Hashem and only Hashem. And therefore, "Velo asuka asher dibera lehen melech Mitzrayim." They didn't go through with the plan of the king of Egypt in order to kill all of the male babies. "Vatehayena et ha'Eladim." And they let all of the children live. Paro was hoping that he can again try and fool everybody. That's normal, that if a child, if a baby boy dies on the birthing table, that's part of life. It happens occasionally that one by one, these midwives will go through his plan and it won't even be revealed that Paro was behind it. It'll have plausible deniability. But these midwives would not go through it. And it makes sense why, as Rashi tells us, Shifra and Pu'ah were Yocheved and Miriam, the righteous woman who eventually will be involved with Moshe Rabbeinu's life. In the next Aliyah, we'll continue to talk about the relationship between Paro and the Mialedot.